Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, man. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Sebastian Scales Show. Oh, extra comfy, cozy. Dude, things are picking up, man. I feel like I say that every time, and I think it's just because every time I record one of these episodes, things just keep, it all just keeps accelerating. It feels like the more we become aware of the synchronistic experience, the more synchronicities we see, and it's all just so fun. And it's also so fun because it doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing, who you're with, it's always happening if you're open to it. I mean, it's always happening regardless, but it's always available to be seen and experienced if you're aware and open to it. One of my best friends had a wedding in Mexico, in Playa del Carmen. And my girlfriend, Galen, and I went beforehand to just basically hang out. And there was a big group of my friends from college who were going to Tulum and places beforehand, but I feel like I'm at this place now where I know, like all my life I've been such an extrovert to the point where I've sort of registered that it was almost like a defense mechanism. And now that I'm feeling more safe in my body and in the universe, I feel, like basically no need to socialize. And that's, I feel like this pendulum has in the last year swung so far back the other direction where I'm like, oh, I might not hang out with anybody for a long time. And now it's like more balanced. And so it was the first destination wedding that I've ever been to. And it was at an all-inclusive resort. And we went beforehand to basically charge and just have a chill time because there were going to be so many people that would be at the resort. And so Galen and I just got like an Airbnb just right on the water in a place called Akumal. And we had a great time, super chill. And then on one night, I had gotten back a little bit before Galen. She was doing some shopping. And I had put my wallet on the table right next to the window, and we were on the ground floor. And that night, we were like kind of sleeping, kind of awake, but I remember hearing some sounds. And I felt this feeling in my stomach and in my chest that was it was like a definitive recognition of something is off. Something's weird. Something's bad. It felt like something was dangerous. And I didn't know. And I actively like talked myself down. I was like, don't worry about it. Like, it's just noises, you know, like we're in, it's fine. And Galen was kind of, you know, feeling something too. She was like, what are those sounds? And we both just basically ignored it. And then the next morning, we were getting ready to go to get some food, and I started looking around for my wallet, and we couldn't find it. And we were looking around the apartment and everything was fine. And then at some point, you know, I guess this is different for everybody, but after probably like 2 or 3 minutes of searching, my brain started to switch into one, realizing like, oh, my wallet might really actually be gone. And the fucking physical tensions that started to tighten in my body were so intense. Like and to think too that that's just the beginning of the panic. But I'd been so relaxed up until this point that the contrast was so clear and extreme. And I remember just starting to feel like, oh, I'm about to freak out right now. And not like in an angry way or anything, but just like I feel myself panicking. And and Galen, I started hearing her doing these really deep, like, you know, just starting to panic too. And for some reason, And I think this is just because of the things that we talk about in this podcast. Like, there's so many, there's infinite examples now of things that have felt like they were bad at the time or wrong, or I should have done this differently, or yada, 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 that in retrospect, at some point, you see how perfect everything was and why things needed to be that way and why even the things that our mind conceptually identifies as wrong in the grand scheme of things are always perfect. And you just don't have all of the data yet to see it. But at some point, it'll become clear. And I remember thinking, like, as I was starting to panic, like, let's just experiment here. Like, what would happen if I didn't attach a whole bunch of weight to this wallet and basically just experience this without a need to get it back, without a need to ensure that it returns, without torturing myself? What would this experience be like if I didn't make my body and mind and everything suffer? Like, there's, I forget who's, I think this was Eckhart Tolle who talked about, like, when you see somebody drop a watch, like a really nice watch, on the ground and it shatters, you don't feel anything. Maybe you feel, you know, oh, I'm sorry that that happened to you, but you don't feel anything really internally. But if it's your watch, all of a sudden it's like, oh, fuck, no, this is the, ah, you know, just immediate spirals. And so anyway, I said that out loud to Galen as we were both starting to panic. Like, let's just see here. Let's just experiment. We can always panic later. But let's stay open, because maybe this is good somehow. And just that switch, just that, like, one moment immediately transformed the tension. Because that tension needs fuel. It needs thoughts that are negative and panicky in order to continue to tense and tighten. But just even having the awareness that you have the option to not panic makes the experience of panicking completely different. Because panicking feels like it has such a chokehold on our reality, to the point where, you know, it almost feels like it's so ingrained in our thought patterns and our habit patterns that we forget that it is an option. It's a choice. Sometimes when we have a habit that's so deeply ingrained in ourselves, we forget that this is something that we have the option to not do. And often the more ingrained it is, the harder it is to break that habit, but it is breakable. And breaking it isn't even the right word. It's more like releasing it. It's like, because it is effortless. It is effortless to not panic. Panicking requires effort. And it happens so fast and so habitually that it's easy to forget that this is a choice. And then when, like, it's just immediately I felt like I might have lost this wallet, or this, whatever happened, this might have happened just so that I could experience this moment of release of panic. And I was also thinking to myself, like, you know, I had like $80 in the wallet, and then, like, you know, some things that were more significant, like driver's license, credit cards, etc. But really, I mean, I would pay $80 to not have to experience those feelings of panic. And yeah, it's a fun thing to realize that you have entire control, I guess is the word, but You always have the option to feel however you want to feel. And then I almost started getting excited. Like, I was excited by the release of this tension. And by, like, the, you know, the sort of cosmic treasure hunt that we're all on for in these signs that reveal themselves to us, that it was like, oh, what is this going to take us to? And I don't need to know yet to know that it is as significant as everything else that's going on. So anyway, Galen was right there with me. She was like, all right, cool. I mean, great. Let's do this. Let's try this differently. And, basically what we think happened is, you could see the wallet from through the window. And I think somebody that was either working at the condo complex or was just walking by maybe picklocked the door or had a key to it, but it was gone for sure. And, we were thinking about that feeling that we both had the night before and how we knew that something was wrong, but also how essential it, we also knew to not do anything about it. On some level, you know, like our being was aware that there was danger nearby, but also how catastrophically bad that could have been if I or either of us walked out, saw somebody taking the wallet, and then they panic because they know that they're going to be in a bunch of trouble, could have been disastrous. But once we realized the wallet was gone, it was like and we snapped out of panic mode. It was a pretty clear link that like we both had some intuition that this was going on. So we told the building manager, and he was helpful. And we contacted Airbnb, and basically they were like, they don't have like insurance for it, but they were helpful. And we called the cops. The cops came, and you can't really prove anything, you know, like there was no breaking and entering or anything that, we didn't have much to go off of, but they had a camera that was right pointing down, literally like right at our door. And so they got the tapes, but the tapes were blurry, apparently. And I was like really trying to get them to show me, and eventually they did. And the tapes were blurry, but it's a little bit fishy, you know? Your security footage is blurry? Yeah, I don't know, dude. But the cops came, they were cool. And it was just nice to have all of these interactions that are normally so charged. Like, if that panic was left unchecked, I mean, it would have been like, how could you let this happen? Blah! You know, just a invasion of all these other people's existences because of a lack of awareness of my own feelings. But instead, the whole thing was very calm. And fortunately, we had hidden our passports in the Airbnb, and I just fucked up. Well, fucked up, quote unquote, on one plane, on one level, I fucked up because I lost my wallet. And, you know, yes, that's bad from the perspective of wanting to have the wallet. But in the grand scheme of things, who knows? So it was just totally chill. I had everything that I needed. Galen still had her credit cards and stuff, and it was fine. And I'd had the last time that I was in Mexico, which was like, I don't know, 10 years before that. Actually not that long, but my wallet was stolen that time too, except that time I left it on the beach when I went snorkeling, and that was just so silly. But that time I had a massive reaction to it, and it totally affected the trip so negatively. Like, it just became this disaster over really it's nothing more than just an inconvenience. Like, all of this stuff is replaceable. It just takes a little bit of time. But it just felt so good to not react, basically, or to stop reacting negatively. So Airbnb offered us to, they were like, we can put you up in a hotel, or if there's anything that you want to change, just let us know. But they don't really have any policies for this stuff. So we just kind of dropped it, and they kept trying to contact us, obviously, because it's like a serious thing. And we just, at a certain, like, because we had released the charge ourselves, at a certain point, it just became like, we don't care anymore. Like, we just want to enjoy this, the rest of this trip. So we sort of just stopped responding. And then we went to the wedding, and well, actually, I also just need to say, last night, I got back from the wedding, and I had a email from Airbnb saying, hey, we've refunded your account $513. Which was like, I like double took it. I was like, what just happened here? Like, we didn't even request anything. And they just, the reservation was $1,000 for 4 nights. Galen and I were splitting it. And they just refunded half of it. Just for no, like, it was almost like maybe the silence of like us not responding like made them nervous or something, and they were like thinking that we were gonna sue them. Who knows? But it was really cool to have this be the result of not reacting to the lost wallet. Like, my wallet got stolen, and I made $487 because I had $80. Oh, I don't know if that math is right, but basically, I lost $80, gained $513, and then I can use some of that money to pay for, you know, the replacement cards and things. But like, it feels like in that space of, like, if I had all the money that I ever would need, it would make no difference to me if I lost that wallet with $80. And so without consciously being like, I'm going to, you know, do this for the sake of operating in a space where vibrationally I have everything that I need, it was just not reacting and operating the way that I always sort of have. And then as a result of that, shifting into a space where it's okay. I have enough. I have more than enough. And then to have Airbnb just give us this refund, which was so much more than, I mean, we weren't expecting anything. It was just like, it felt like a sort of universal confirmation that, like, you're good, dude. Like, they absolutely keep responding this way. that is excellent. I would toss my wallet in the ocean if it fucking meant that I got $500 for it. Amazing. And on top of the sort of the intuitive knowing and realizing, like, oh yeah, even though we sensed that there was danger, we knew not to do anything about it. And yeah, it was epic. And then the wedding itself was like this magical sequence of, well, I guess you guys, I'm sure I've talked about Christine, my therapist, who passed away at the beginning of this year. A lot of my friends were seeing her, and the two of my best friends who were both getting married were seeing her too. And they began their wedding ceremony with an intention from Christine. It was like an excerpt that Christine's kids had sent her. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but what I remember is the feeling that it cultivated in me, which it felt like what did it feel like? It felt like we're here to celebrate these two people that we all love, and also to grow together, like as a unit. Like, this is not just a wedding. This is like a universal experience, as every wedding is, but it's specifically like it's for so much more than just we're official now. It's like, this is, it felt like such a, like a spiritual bomb had gone off, like a love bomb. And in part, it's because, you know, so many of my favorite people were there. But it just, it had this unique feeling to it that I hadn't experienced at a wedding before, certainly. And they asked me to speak at the wedding. And I was like so, you know, nervous about it. Not nervous, like I was excited to speak, but I was nervous because it's not like stand-up where it's just me and like the only goal is to, you know, fucking make people laugh. It's like they're entrusting a, what many people believe to be the biggest day of their lives. They're entrusting a portion of that to me. And to, you know, give a speech that is significant. But anyway, it was an experience that after their ceremony and like all this stuff with Christine's intentions and things, I was just feeling so good. Like I remember at I spoke at the reception. So they had the reception. Or fuck, what is it called? What's the terminology? They had their marriage ceremony, and then we all went downstairs for the dinner reception, and that's when the speeches were. So we had the dinner, and I remember during the dinner just feeling like what it felt like was like on the come down from mushrooms, where you're not really tripping anymore, but you're feeling like intensely relaxed and full of love. And I was just totally sober, like, you know, the whole weekend. Other than I took like a third of an edible on the last day in the middle of the day, and it was lovely, but you know, I wasn't drinking at all. And it was so much more intense than drugs. It was like really, really intense, loving feelings. And I remember getting ready to do the speech. My friend Maddie and his now wife, Victoria, Maddie's brother was going to go first, and then Victoria's sister, and then me. So it was like a pretty big, you know, it's like, and there was like 100 and something people there. And it was like, you know, I really, really wanted it to go well. But being in this space of feeling like just so, I don't know, it was like love was the primary emotion that I and what felt like everyone there was experiencing. And in that space, it's hard to maintain the normal thought patterns that try to make you think, that try to tell you that life is not okay, things are bad somehow. It was just such a good feeling, because when I actually got up and did the speech, it was like I was completely out of my head in terms of, this is me. This is about me doing this. Like it was like a full shift of attention to this is about you guys, for you guys, and I'm just a conduit, you know, for it. Like it just felt so good to have the egoic perception, you know, released in format that normally feels so egoically panicky to me if it doesn't go exactly right. And like I remember, you know, the first half of my speech was pretty, you know, supposed to be funny, and then the second half was supposed to be more sincere. I mean, and that totally, it totally was that. Like it, a lot of this, the jokes all landed, and then the more sentimental stuff seemed to be going well too. And when I finished, like people were saying really, really amazing things to me. And yet my brain was trying so hard to come up with reasons why this wasn't enough. And it which is pretty standard for my brain. You know, whenever I do stand up, it's like it blocks out all of the laughs and just focuses on any moment that wasn't exactly right, which biologically, evolutionarily makes sense. It is dangerous to just focus on things that were good. You know, what a waste of time that is, you know, evolutionarily. It's not beneficial for survival. At least our minds don't think it is. We know, obviously, through the things that we talk about here, that like focusing on things that are good is like the ultimate thing, the ultimate, you know, decision to make for life enjoyment. But our minds and our egos are trying to keep us safe. So it tries so hard to come up with something that's wrong because that's what it's always done. But I was feeling so good and so relaxed that it felt like I couldn't even begin to fuel these thoughts of things that were wrong with what I had said, just because I was feeling too good. And it was almost like, because the jokes all landed, that's normally the metric where or that's normally the thing that my mind will latch onto, is like, this didn't hit enough. This wasn't funny enough. But because the jokes hit, my mind hopped to somehow there wasn't enough silence, or not, like, I don't know what it literally didn't even make any sense. It was like I fucking it was like I was trying, my mind was trying to convince myself that people were not affected enough by the sentimental part of the speech, which is like, how could you be more affected than being like emotional, which people were, and or like just silent and engaged. It's like, you're not quiet enough, my mind says to me. Like, what the fuck? But in this space of like, you know, deep love, it is pretty easy to watch these thoughts, and they just float by. And it feels so, so good. Like, I didn't even have, it's like you can see the whole trajectory. Like, you can see what life would be like if you were to fuel these thoughts. And you just don't have any urge to, because of how good you feel. And because you're aware, you know, of like how many times you've done this and for what. It's like, it's just experimenting with behaving differently and allowing yourself to experience a different reality that feels better. And I remember, like, dude, the next day, I was in the water with just a friend of mine, and he was asking me a bunch of questions about LA, and then we left the water, and then like 30 minutes later, a thought popped into my head of, I didn't ask him enough questions in that interaction. That was a real thought that popped into my head. And my brain started like running with that a little bit, of because I didn't see it in the way that I saw these things the day before. Not as quickly. Eventually I did, but in the interim time I started thinking like, oh man, that was really rude. He was asking me all these awesome questions about like my life and stuff, and I didn't reciprocate enough. Even though, like, we were only in the water for a second, like, not long, really. But then I was like, okay, hang on a minute. What the fuck am I thinking right now? First of all, this guy doesn't even think like this. He's never, ever said to me, you didn't ask me enough questions in that conversation. First of all, who the fuck, who does that anyway? But it's so funny to catch your mind projecting absurd thoughts onto people that have never given you a reason to even think that they would think that. It's just your mind latching onto something desperately because it feels the need to do that in order to survive. And then once I became aware of it, it was like, oh, this is so silly, dude. Like, he's at an all-inclusive resort. He paid $1,000 to be here. He flew in. You know, like, all the food is free and paid for. Everything is taken care of. Do you think he flew to Mexico to think about how you didn't ask him enough questions about his life? Like, he's trying to enjoy his life, not fucking talk to you about it, and you specifically. Ah, there's another layer to it, too. Like, the ego is so sneaky in that way, dude. Like, yeah, he's super pissed that I specifically didn't ask him about his life because he really values me knowing about his life. It's such a sneaky thing, dude. It's like, actually, what it's saying is, I'm so important that my inquiry into what's happening in your life would be so devastating not to receive that... that I'm going to be upset with you now and not enjoy this fucking dank ass free food, well, paid for, but free theoretically food. It's so silly when you say it out loud. And also, what's the plan? Like, if you have these thoughts and you catch yourself in these loops, ask yourself, what can I actually do about this? If this is something that you really feel is worth your energy, what are you going to do about it? Because if there's no tangible path, if there's no like actual potential solution, then you're just ruminating for no reason other than it just to torture yourself and out of habit. If there's something you can do about it, then great. But like, what's my plan? Fucking, hey, what, I'm going to track Chris down at the resort. Hey, man, I need to talk to you. There's something I got to talk to you about, man. When we were in the water earlier and you were asking me questions about my life and I was answering them and then we had to leave the water to go do something else and I'm just so sorry. I'm so sorry that I didn't ask you what's going on in your life even though I saw you a few months ago. And like, if I said that to him, he would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why are you talking to me about this? Like, dude, you know how absurd he would have to be thinking about that, to be thinking that about that interaction? He's swimming in the Pacific Ocean. The Caribbean. He's swimming in the Caribbean waters, just curious about my life, asking genuine questions. He's not asking me those questions because he's like just wanting me to ask about his life. And if he is, he's nuts. And I'm not going to fucking spend my time freaking out about somebody who's operating in that headspace. But he would never think like that. And yet my brain, if left unchecked, will convince itself that that is not only true, but needs to be worried about and felt in my stomach and just pan. It's almost like if I'm not stressing, that's dangerous. If I'm relaxed, that's dangerous from my mind's perspective. And I think, you know, that's really what we're dealing with. It's like that is the primal thing, is that relaxation means you're going to get caught by the tiger. But when the tiger is, I didn't ask my friend enough questions, that is not a real tiger. No matter how many questions I don't ask somebody about their life, they're not going to attack me. So it's so helpful to be aware of. And I just, it's so funny, dude. It's so funny to register what's going on in your mind and to change it. It's like life becomes so, it's like a, every moment is like an opportunity to expand and keep shifting into the reality that you'd like to experience. And on the last day, it was like, you know, like, I don't know, I think about 6 p.m. And I left the resort to go stay at a hotel next to the airport before my flight early the next morning. And right when I got into the shuttle, I had said bye to Maddie and Victoria. We were all hanging out on the last part of the last day. And what popped into my head was I didn't say enough there in that final interaction. Like I needed to say more. And I saw that very quickly. And I started thinking to myself, okay, this is the same thing. It's the same thing as not asking enough questions. It's just another egoic hop. And I started thinking to myself, like, let's deal with this, you know? Of course we can just change it and all this stuff, and that's all great. But like, sometimes you just want to go into the root, you know? Like, as if I could possibly say the wrong thing. I said something to the effect of like, I love you guys so much, and this is amazing. This has all been so amazing. But because I didn't say, I'm so happy for you, congratulations on your marriage. Because I didn't say whatever the generic things are, I'm now projecting onto them that they're going to be spending the last day of their wedding weekend thinking about how this guy who, of all these people, they asked to speak at their wedding. We had an amazing time. They had a fucking amazing time. It's all magical. And my brain's like, nah, fuck that, dude. They finally have alone time. They've had 100 people to entertain all weekend, and now everyone's gone. And the first thing they're going to do is talk shit about me not saying some generic fucking phrase that's so, it's a fine phrase, all good. But like, nobody is interested in thinking like this. They're not. Just like with Chris, they're spending too much fucking, it's like things are too good to think this way. And it just, I knew conceptually that there was no way that they were thinking this, but I still was feeling, you know, the mind pull. And I was thinking to myself, okay, what do I have to believe is true in order for this to be a consistent worry? I think it was Bashar or maybe Teal Swan who was talking about how these beliefs are there because you or your beliefs think that they are optimal. You think that you need to do this in order to, because it's what's best for you. So basically, I think that what I say is not enough, regardless of what I say. Because I think regardless of what I said to Maddie and Victoria in that final interaction, my brain would have come up with some reason why that wasn't enough. And I think that's part of why, you know, it's helpful to just change the thought into something positive. They love you, etc. All good. But in a way, that's like putting a Band-Aid on the sort of thought pattern. And I guess it's great because you start to change the momentum of the thoughts, of course. But sometimes it feels like you got to go down into the root of what's fueling that in order to really release it. And I started thinking about like the trial, because basically, you know, I said the truth about what I was feeling and all this stuff, and it wasn't believed. And so I guess I internalized this belief that no matter what I say, it's not going to be enough. Which basically makes everything that I say susceptible to negative interpretations, people not believing me, people being upset with me, danger coming from what I say. And then I thought about it more and it was like, yeah, but I know in retrospect now that everything that I said was perfect. Including like, you know, not him not getting convicted. Like, and I don't know if there's anything that I could have said that would have gotten him convicted, but, you know, I needed to have those experiences, the absurdity of everything that happened. I mean, it all led me to here, and here is too good to want to have anything be different. So I think it's like, once I started thinking about that and really, really allowing myself to feel how it would feel to know that everything that I say is enough, that everything I've ever said and will ever say is enough, sinking into that feeling, I just immediately basically started crying. And I'm just like, you know, silently on this shuttle bus, just me and the driver. And it felt so good. And I don't know if I released all of it but some of it for sure. And if it's not all of it, that's okay. But it just felt good to, you know, consider what life would be like if I didn't believe what I believe on a really sort of deep conscious, subconscious level. How fun it would be to go through life without having thoughts like this, to be able to leave an interaction and know that everything that I said was perfect. How would that feel? And just like imagining the freedom of it. Just feeling like the knowing. It felt fantastic. And I was like crying because of, you know, almost like the recognition of like why I do this and how I am changing. And that it's possible to change, and that there will inevitably come a time when I don't think like this anymore, and how fun it is to consider that and to be getting closer to that without any insistence that it happens now, just continuing to allow it all. Yeah. It was awesome. And yeah, I think that was everything. I mean, definitely not, actually. There's so much more to say, but that feels like a good stopping point for this one. So as always, thank you for listening and watching. I'm trying to be more consistent with this. I'm literally recording this, you know, the night that I have gotten back, and it feels good. So thank you very, very, very much. And yeah, I hope that whatever thoughts you may be having that you don't want to continue having are fuel for your awareness expansion, and that you know that no matter how long you've been thinking this way, you can change it. And there is a reality out there for you where you not only don't feel these, have these thoughts and feel these tensions in this way about things, but you can actually have thoughts that make you feel loved and amazing and like you're a part of everything is everything that is, because you are. And I'm happy to be a part of it with you. Okay, hasta luego. Au revoir. Goodbye. See you in the next one.